Welcome to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Today I'm talking with Maggie Grace and Mia Maestro from Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. It's a little movie you've probably heard of before. In this interview, we talk about the movie and wearing the contacts and working with the great director Bill Condon and auditions. Yeah, we talk a lot about auditioning. You guys are going to really like it. It's pretty good. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers because every little click does help. And don't forget to check out our actor resources page, our other interviews, and daily acting news. You can find all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here is Maggie and Mia.
So this film's going to be huge.
Do you think so?
we have our doubts.
Yeah.
You know, what's a really encouraging sign is the pre-sales on the midnight screening and the 10 p.m. screening the night before. I thought it might not find its audience before then, but then I felt better. What a relief.
Yeah, it's been really hard too. We're just trying to push this movie so people can watch it.
I feel like, if it's print, we're like, sarcasm. She says sarcastically.
Well, you know, from like my perspective, with all the hype and madness sort of surrounding it, I think it would be tons of fun to be in the middle, you know, where you guys are. What's it like for you?
It is fun. It's got like a sort of camaraderie to it, you know, when we all go to Comic-Con together and that sort of thing. It's fun.
It's exciting also because we got to watch it a couple of days ago and the movie's really good.
Yeah.
So it's just, to me, it's the best one so far, and it has so much action and so many new elements that it just made me just excited to promote it.
Yes, it's a much more grown-up film. I think it's really stands out from the others in terms of theme. It's more about community and this whole community banding together. So and also Bill Condon, man, he's a fantastic actor's director. We just adored him. Every single one of the people on that call sheet adores Bill Condon.
Yeah.
Like, you will not find one person to say a word against him. He loves actors, and he's such a warm, centered person that he was great on set and then created a really, really, you know, put his own personal thumbprint on this. It's really lovely.
Well, what's it like working with him? I mean, do you guys, does he kind of sit back and let you go, or is he more kind of like hands-on?
I think everybody, Mia was saying earlier, like no one on the set felt that they were kind of lost in the mix of things, even with that much chaos and that many people.
He makes sure that nobody's left out. He's extremely warm, and he's very specific with the type of feedback that he gives you, and he's just a wonderful energy to have on set.
And you guys have a huge cast.
Mm-hmm. It was huge.
Yeah,
it was
no, I mean, cast. Just any director handling just the daily on-set reality of that many people and set pieces and, you know, green screen and walls and everything, and to make everyone there feel really
he's
such a communicator.
And being part of the movie, there's a little surprise at the end of this film, the moment I saw it,
tell me, by the way, what surprised.
There's like two things I'm not allowed to talk about.
Oh yeah,
but the moment I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is Bill's making, you know, this, it had like Bill printed over it, you know, so it just made me smile, and it's really a moving gesture that he gave, you know, all the actors and all the fans, and, you know, he gave to the saga.
Yeah.
And you guys, you said earlier that it's more of an adult film. Do you kind of credit that to Bill?
Yeah, I think thematically, certainly is that way, and I think it has a wider appeal. There's more action. I think that the fans have really grown up with these characters, and now we see, for instance, Bella really coming into her own and becoming more of a woman than a girl, and being the vampire she was always meant to be, in a way, you know, much stronger character than before. So, yeah, I think that's the case.
The makeup and the contacts and the wardrobe. When you get on set, how much does it make your job easier to sort of get into that world?
Yes, for sure. The contacts were like a big help just to make the whole costume come together. And you know, and my costume was, you know, pretty specific. You know, we live in Alaska, we're part of the Denali clan, so even though vampires don't feel the cold or any sort of weather, we wear fur and
they blend in.
You know, we just try to blend in with the wintry community. It was a quite specific costume, and Michael, our costume designer, was just really open to any suggestions we would have.
Yeah, Michael's great.
Yeah.
And it's a tall order, that many people. He did really well.
With the contacts, what is your vision like in those? I mean, can you see, like, normal vision?
No.
No?
In fact, you can't really see anything.
Nothing? Like?
It's sort of, for me, and I don't know if this is everyone's experience, but with my contacts, they're gorgeous and hand-painted, and certainly I was happy to have them. They're really a neat addition for the heightened reality of vampire, you know, the vampire aesthetic. But I couldn't see anything. It's like the person opposite me is like a dark smudge against bleary white light. You know, I couldn't see anything.
Do you have to do action scenes with those too? And how do you manage?
They're tricky. It's funny as an actor because you're so used to the business of connection.
Yeah.
And really having an exchange with someone, and then you can't see the person you're speaking to.
So I think it was luck as well, like a little bit of a lottery, because they're hand painted. Like, I could see quite a lot through mine, but I knew that some people couldn't. So it all depends, like which ones you got to, you know, mm-hmm. which ones they gave you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also I wear contact lenses in my normal life, so I think that helped a lot. It was really easy for me to have, you know, just contact lenses. And what I did, which I think is a good trick, is like I wore mine, and then on top I wore the
ones.
Oh, yeah?
So my eye was always protected from those.
That's great.
Yeah, so I think that kind of helped. Because I never had trouble my eyes being irritated. I mean, I had a little bit of trouble, but it was just one day. Then. But some people had a lot of...
Yeah, and I'm normally not so sensitive to much.
So with green screen, you guys are pretty much pros now, I would guess, but is it still, even when you walk on set after having done it like multiple days in a row, is it still something you gotta have to get used to? Like, I don't know, I think I've never done it before, so I think it would just be so strange, like, all right, you're in the woods now.
Yeah, there's a certain point where you just commit, you know, even if you feel really silly. Sometimes it's tough having a really emotional scene with, I don't think my character had me. the funniest stand-in, there was these sort of balls covered with fur that would show the people doing CG exactly how the wolves would look in the light, like for the fur in the light. And so that was kind of funny. They'd have these big cutouts that looked more like cows than wolves, and then these furry balls that we were reacting to as the wolves. So I was just glad I didn't have any really high-stakes emotional scenes with, like, the furry balls.
Mm-hmm.
The fur balls.
It's also, I think, with green screen, you have a question of, like, trusting your director and just letting the director guide you what you're really supposed to be doing, you know, because I think the tendency for me if it's an emotional moment, and because there's nothing to play against, you do it smaller than what, you know, you just turn your whole emotions a little bit down. So it's just good to have someone like Bill saying, like, you know, right now we need to, like, bring the energy up, and whatever you're doing, do it like three times bigger, and, you know, so it's not so much a question of intensity, but it's a question of, like, quantity, like, how, you know, how much of that intensity could I show with this green backdrop, you know, because I think when we're in a room, then energy just gets absorbed by the
table. Especially when you've been in a room for 6 weeks shooting the same scene.
So it gets, energetically, you get dizzy a bit in terms of, like, where am I, what am I doing? It's just, everything becomes the same. And also because it's green, your eyes sometimes get tired.
Yeah.
Plus the contact lenses, sometimes it was a little bit kind of like dreamy. Like, well, like, there's too much green.
It's strange.
I need to go and take a break. And, you know, a lot of people were reading... Or I found, like, just concentrate, like, I would break my New Yorker magazine it was just nice to have something to focus, like, really close, because just to focus. And then also, because it's like a confrontation scene where, you know, and it's a talk between the Volturis and the Cullens, it's like two bands, you know, like, kind of like a sort of like a, like an old war, you know,
where you stand
composition, where like it's a standoff. So like Maggie was like on the other side of the field, and so there were, it's, it was a block between us, so just to concentrate onto that was a little bit like,
yes. Whoa. But luckily, about, you know, three of the silliest boys
I know you had today
are in the Volturi.
Yeah,
so we had fun too.
So much fun, actually, because we would all get quite slap happy, and, you know, it becomes like, devolves to kindergarten.
I'm sure, like, after 16-hour days, you're just like, ooh, your brain's just kind of melting.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, I think a 12-hour day in a green screen is different than a 12-hour day anywhere else.
That's why it was good to have, to have, like, New Orleans nearby, just to go and have, you know, have listen to good jazz and just clear your mind from the green screen, the green screen nightmare, you know.
But, yeah, I think trusting your director is the biggest thing, you're right.
And this was a long shoot, wasn't it? What, 6 months?
Five months. I was very much in and out.
Were you?
Because my character's the traitor, the catalyst for all evil, really. So she's not really helping out in the group scenes. She's chosen her path.
Were you able to go work on other things while you were?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which was nice. But everyone else, it was, you know, kind of like summer camp. It's five months.
Yeah, we made the best out of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's a good camaraderie.
Yeah. So when you guys finish shooting the film, are you itching to get back to work immediately, or do you want to kind of kick back and...
Depends
on the film.
Yeah.
Like, what about this one? Were you kind of just exhausted?
No. I mean, I was...
Yeah.
Come in, betray, leave.
I was finishing my album at the time,
later.
So it was just nice. I was just itching to just finish it, and my album was produced by an Icelandic producer, so and we recorded at his studio in Reykjavik. So I was itching just to go back to Iceland and just you know, finish it and mix it and do this. Record the strings and the brass arrangements. So yeah, but also with a schedule like that, it gives you a lot of time just to work on other things. So even if you're on location, you can work from your room or write. Or I worked on music, and then it was kind of nice because when Breaking Dawn Part 1 came out, one of my songs that I had been finishing throughout the movie ended up being in the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
So it kind of like all came full circle.
You guys have both worked with, you know, some fantastic Liam Neeson and Michael Sheen in the movie.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself that's kind of sitting back and thinking, oh, just kind of trying to suck in some of their talent, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's funny what you really absorb and internalize, and what you don't. Like, with Taken, like, some of it seems so kind of surreal, the size of the audience it found. But the one time I got really, really giddy when the sequel came out was when Liam went on Actors Studio. And I used to watch that when I was a little baby drama nerd. And just to see, like, Liam, who's, you know, a friend and somebody I really adore, on there. And, you know, even to hear him, like, say my name on that show, it was so funny. It really impacted me in a way I could not have expected. I became absolutely giddy, you know, when someone sent me the link. That was really, really fun for me. It's funny kind of what moments are signposted, and, you know. But yeah, I think that was one of the things I was most excited about in Twilight, was working with Bill Condon, who's such a fantastic director, and then having a scene with Michael Sheen, even if I couldn't see him through the contacts, still, you know, this is a really great actor. I was like front and center when he opened on Broadway in Frost Nixon, you know. I mean, he's fantastic. So it's fun to see him really play in this, because he can kind of do whatever occurs to him with Arrow. You know, it's a fun little playground for an actor like Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
You know.
And speaking of Broadway, you're about to... When do you start rehearsals for that?
Really, the morning after the Twilight premiere. So sadly, I'm going to... I feel like this is the story with my Twilight experience. Thank God I got great friendships out of it, like Mia. But I'm like always missing the cool kids moments. Like, I'll get to come to part of the premiere, but I can't stay out late because I have to be in rehearsals in New York the next morning.
Oof.
So... but I think it's going to be a really great night because there's some honest to goodness, like, really great energy with that cast and great friendships, and it'll be such a fun moment.
Yeah. Have you guys had, like, any nightmare auditions?
Sure. Yeah, it's funny, the ones, though, that you walk away from feeling really terrified and humiliated are often the offers.
Where you're questioning yourself.
Yeah, you know, you never know. Yeah, and one, I remember they posted my lost audition on the internet, and I didn't know it. Like, my manager had approved it, and I didn't know.
Yeah.
I was so embarrassed. I was like, oh my God, that's not finished work. That's so embarrassing.
I think it's a very unnatural circumstance for an actor, because normally when you are cast in a movie, you never get to arrive into a room full of unknown people and off-bed, like, off-page, perform a scene perfectly, you know. It's kind of like a natural, and it's not actually, you know...
It's not an interaction.
It's not actually that good of an acting process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because normally the best thing it is to do your homework and just be ready, but also arrive to a room or arrive to rehearsal or to a job and work on the scene with your director, have a wonderful director directing you, mm-hmm. and guiding you through it, and also have an actor or an actress or a group of actors playing the scene at the same level that you're going to be playing it. And not, you know, most of the time, some of the auditions that, you know, you do, or 50% of the time, are read by people that are not actors. And
we're not looking at you.
Or not mm-hmm. looking at you. Or so.
No, Molly. No.
So, yeah, it's an entirely different animal.
So it's not. It's actually. I think the art of acting and the art of auditioning.
Two totally separate.
A very
things.
Different thing. You know, there's some wonderful actors that just are not good at auditioning, or
some great auditioners that get to set and they're just.
And then they, you know, they could be stage fright by having to perform in front of 400 people crew, you know? Mm-hmm. If you have less a scene.
Or they don't have a sense of the arc, because I often feel that actors are more prone to show every single color in one scene that wouldn't naturally be there in the arc of the story, because they want to show, whether it be a studio test or a network test, they kind of want to show them everything,
yeah.
just in case they're like, well... You know, but you wouldn't necessarily play the scene that way.
Yeah.
It's not a natural process.
It's kind of tricky, and I think good auditioning, it's not only... You have to know, you know, your audition, how to audition, but mm-hmm. also the casting director and the director, they have to know how to audition for, you know. So...
And some, you know,
kind
some
of
them are better
that everyone numbers. In the room are on the same page on all those things. And sometimes it happens, and it's wonderful. And when you do mm-hmm. a
sometimes
great reading...
it really feels like workshopping something. Like,
yeah.
I've worked with directors that I have the utmost respect for creatively, that I'm just thrilled to get to work through something with them in the room, and it really feels more like a rehearsal than an audition.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, everybody's got a different process. Like, Danny Boyle reads the scene with you.
Yeah, that was,
oh, wow.
was wonderful.
Yeah.
Things with Danny Boyle. Also, you know, I once auditioned for Francis Ford Coppola, and we did it at his house in Napa Valley, and I, you know, he invited four or five actors, and we all spent the night, and we worked all day on the auditions and
yeah.
the reading, and at night, like, Francis cooked,
it's
you
more
know,
like a play reading.
Cooked
yeah.
some spaghetti, and we all had a lovely meal, and the next morning we had a tour of the vineyard, and
that's
we
great.
Went home. So, you know, it's
the best audition ever.
Steven Spielberg feels like he's going to freak actors out just by his presence.
Mm-hmm.
He films them, and then he's in the next room. He never works with, well, to my knowledge and in my experience, he's not there in the room, because I think
so
it throws some people.
I think
yeah.
I think
so everybody's really different.
Great directors have great way of auditioning. There's some directors that don't like to be in the room, but they trust the casting director, you know, so much that and the casting director found like the way that that director wants you to audition specifically. For example, Terrence Malick's casting director, she's wonderful.
Yeah,
and it's basically like a, you know, you just go and improvise for her for like 25 minutes, and you read something beautiful that he wrote, and it's just whatever that inspires you, you just can create. So mm-hmm. when you do an audition like that, no matter if you get cast or not cast, you've shown the best, you know.
You feel like you've discovered something in his process. Yeah.
So that's kind of wonderful when auditioning, it's a creative process. And when it's not, you just, you know.
Well, so often, especially now, I feel like it's really changed even in the last 10 years because of the way that the movie business has changed. And there's more, on one hand, we have like incredibly niche things, and on the other, these huge tentpole franchises. But then there's a lot of secrecy around them. So often, you won't have a script, you won't have any information yeah. about the character, and they're sending you, you know, placebo sides mm-hmm. that don't actually, those words don't belong to that person anyway.
I kind of like that, don't you?
No.
I do.
I think it's kind of like it allows for versatility. It's essence casting is what it is. And then you win the lottery or you don't. Yeah, okay. But it's kind of like, I'm, you know, an actor, I want to be given the you know, there's a spectrum here. Like, certainly there's roles that I'm probably not going to be first in people's minds for, but there's a lot that is certainly not represented in the body of work that's out there. Mm-hmm. And I would much prefer to have some idea of what they're looking for so that I can help, as opposed to this lottery system where if you guess correctly, you win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Uh-huh. They're assuming actors only do one thing. And that by not giving them any information or character or, you know, any idea of what they want, then it's harder to give that to them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I prefer a more open dialogue, I guess. And that they'll trust that I'm not a vlogger, and I'm not. And I'm not talking about this experience at all, by the way.
Uh-huh, yeah,
this
yeah.
is not a Twilight
yeah,
audition.
The audition process. Twilight was super
That was
simple.
Super great. Mm-hmm. And
very straightforward. And
the book's there, and
wonderful,
we know what we're auditioning for. Yeah,
yeah.
Super lovely. And Bill Condon's such an actor's director that it was just a great process and really quick and simple. But yeah, I think it's just funny how it's become different. Last 10 years.
Thanks, guys, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thanks for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.